Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back. It is Farm Talk. Well, after Dakota Fest, and we had a chance to visit with a number of producers down in South Dakota this week, and guess what? They're all talking about the same thing, the dicamba dilemma, which is, I guess, in quotes nowadays or in bold headlines. So let's bring on North Dakota State University Extension weed specialist, Dr. Richard Zollinger. Hello, Rich.
Good afternoon, Mick.
Well, I guess since we've talked last, which was, I guess, about 2 to 3 weeks ago, where are we at in our dicamba story 2017?
Well, probably we have seen the most of what we're going to see since most of the applications were made the latter part of June, maybe a little bit in the first part of July, and here we are in the past the mid part of August. What we have seen is probably the extent of what we're going to see. It did catch us by surprise, and I have a constant flow of phone calls and emails mostly asking why it happened, and of course the yield component, if they were to expect any yield. And I probably ought to just record it once, and then when they ask the question, I just hit play and record it. But really, there's three fundamental things that we have done different. The use of dicamba in North Dakota in the past has mainly been on wheat and corn. And we applied the dicamba earlier, much earlier in the spring, around May, maybe the 1st of June, on small wheat and small corn. But now, with this dicamba soybean, we can apply it much later, even around the R2 stage of soybean, or up to the R2 stage of soybean. So we're applying it later when sensitive crops like, non-dicamba-resistant soybean are around that area. And then the other thing is, dicamba in wheat and corn were around 2 fluid ounces or 4 fluid ounces in corn, quite a substantial reduction in rate. But in soybean, we can apply a half a pound of active ingredient per acre, which is 4 to 6, maybe 8, at least double or triple the rate that we're using. And so we're applying it later, we're applying a higher rate, and then the thing I don't think was probably pressed enough in the winter meetings last winter is that soybean is the most susceptible plant to dicamba. So if everybody grew Xtend beans, there would be basically no problem. I guess you have gardens and trees and things like that. But if the beans around that area are not dicamba resistant and some drift happens, then it doesn't take very much to induce the symptoms of the cup leaves and the blistered leaves.
Very interesting. Now, Rich, I want to ask you a couple of delicate questions, and so if you don't want to say something, that's okay, because we're friends.
Sure.
But there have been some people in the media. Well, actually, some people, a lot of producers, and people who are very frustrated with what's going on out there, saying that the companies have created more volatile formulations of the herbicides that are made available, and it's different than in the past. Is that a possibility?
Sure, I can address that. The sources of off-target or off-site movement or injury to crops would be actual movement of the spray droplets, and we call that particle drift. And then the second one would be tank contamination, where you don't clean the sprayer out sufficiently. And then the third one would be volatilization. And so if the symptoms occur, within a few days after application, and the wind was blowing maybe more than the 10-mile-an-hour limit that's on the label, that possibly could be answered or responsible by particle drift, by the drift of the droplets. But what we have seen in North Dakota and in many other areas is the symptoms have occurred 3 to 4 weeks after most of the applications have been made. Mm-hmm. And so this, to a scientist, would more closely relate to volatilization, where you spray it, you kept it in the field where it's supposed to be. And so the farmers can do many things to reduce off-target movement at application. But once the droplet leaves the nozzle, then we're up to Mother Nature and the physical properties of the dicamba molecule. And if you put a pot of boiling water on the stove and you turn on the heat, after a minute or so, you're going to get boiling water. You're going to get action. You're going to get a lot of movement, of a lot of
vapor coming up into the air.
Yes, have this change from a liquid to a gas. The water is evaporating. Well, we've had hot temperatures and heat, and just the activity of Mother Nature and the process of degradation and the maybe the reduction of the formulation that was applied. It appears that many things could be answered by volatilization. And I just want to say one more thing. There's a few things that we think we know, and there's a lot of things that we don't know. And between now and next March, I think a lot of additional information will come to light from our chemical industry partners. And there are scientists in Tennessee and Arkansas that are working on this volatility topic. And so I think there will be a lot of additional information that will come forward to help us answer why and under what instances and circumstances that maybe we can expect volatility.
Okay, and can we have some answers? Do you think next year is going to be different? Or will this system be not available next year? What do you think?
All right. That's a good question, and many others have asked it. And I think that when EPA and our chemical industry partners, folks, when they sit down to the table, they'll probably be more, I hate to use the word, restrictions. And maybe the restriction would be, okay, in North Dakota, in Arkansas, you can't spray beyond, you know, July 1st. Mm-hmm. Maybe in North Dakota, we can't spray beyond June 25th. I think there'll be maybe a cutoff date. There could be a cutoff date where no more dicamba is allowed. That might be one restriction. Another thing that might happen is they might lower the rate, you know, so that we're not saturating the air so much with a higher rate. There's a lot of things that could happen, and it'll be interesting to see what actually does happen.
Yeah, Dr. Richard Zollinger, North Dakota State University Extension weed scientist, looking into his weed crystal ball. You're just thinking out loud there, right?
You bet.
Yeah, all right. The second sensitive question I wanted to ask you, and you were very forthcoming on the first, and very thank you very much, is that Reuters had an article last week and they did some digging, and they found that in the university testing that has been taking place in the last couple of years, they restricted universities in writing with significant damages if they violated the agreement. They forbid vapor to volatilization testing. Are you aware of that at all?
Well, let me address that a little bit on a broader nature. They produced two brand new formulations of dicamba. Monsanto has Extendamax, and BASF has Ingenia. And I can probably see why Reuters are saying that. But in a broader sense, they either did not give us the formulations to work with, and so, you know, there is no work on volatility because we didn't have access to the formulations. And in other cases, they came to us with a set core of treatments that they wanted us to look at to give us a chance to look at the technology and the product. And so we applied those products exactly according to protocol. And so I guess in a sense, they did restrict, you know, personal or individual curiosity or research into not just volatility, but just into the whole technology and how it works in our individual states. So that is true or partially true just because the formulation was restricted from being available to academia to some extent.
Okay. And of course, you were working in a test tube, basically, and farmers are out there using it in the real world.
Real world, that yeah, is right.
For sure.
That is right.
All right, well, good answer on question number two, Rich. Now, thank you. So can we determine at some point that soybean yield has been affected by dicamba? Will we not know until we run it through the combine and look at the yield monitor?
It would be so nice to have a picture or a series of pictures and say, okay, when the soybeans look like this, there's a 3% yield loss. When the soybeans look like this, there's 5%. So you have a gradation of, you know, in severity of injury that equates to yield loss. Can't do that because there's one particular thing that upsets that whole equation. If drift happens when the soybeans are in the vegetative stage before it goes into flowering and pod production, when it's just growing and injury happens, the soybeans are so, that they can rebound, mm-hmm, they can compensate so well, almost more than any other plant. Little injury at the beginning, they can come right back out of it. The problem is when the drift occurs, when the plant is beginning the reproductive stage, starting the little flowers and the little pod development, we have found that the yield loss or the injury, that the results of injury is much more severe and impactful when the drift happens then rather earlier. So if I go out to the farmer's field, I'd have to know exactly when the herbicide was, when the symptoms occurred and what stage that the soybeans were in at that time, and then we can just have a roundabout idea of what's going to happen. But I think when yield happens, when the combines start harvesting, that's when we're going to really know the extent of the symptoms that we've seen.
Okay, Rich, and the other impossible to answer question is: some people are concerned that the seed production, you know, soybeans being grown for next year's seed, might have some germination problems. Have you heard about that?
Well, that makes sense because glyphosate and dicamba 2,4-D, they are moved in the plant to where we call it meristematic tissue, where the cells are actively growing. And in a plant that's in the reproductive stage, that's exactly where the new growth is the little flowers and pods and seed development. So the herbicides are preferentially shuttled right to those areas. And so if some of the herbicide residue gets in the seed, I mean, it's a herbicide, it kills living things, and if there is a very high concentration, then there has been journal reports, scientific research that's already been published, that seed that has residue in it can have maybe reduced germination or reduced plant vigor as a result.
Well, again, there's a lot of concern on that, and the story is not going to be finished until we get maybe even into next spring, but I know there's going to be a lot of germination testing going on this winter, so for sure. All right, NDSU Extension weed specialist Dr. Richard Zollinger. Another thing that will be going on this winter is lots of weed meetings, and like last winter, I think there will be great attendance, especially at the dicamba sessions. So thanks for all the work that you have done and will do.
Thank you, Mick. It's good to be appreciated.
All righty, indeed, and you are. Thank you. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat again on the Dicamba Dilemma Update next time.
Very good, Mick. Look forward to it.
All righty.